Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, ladies and gents, to episode 90 of the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm Julian Klimochko.
And I'm Mike Kesslering.
Today is Friday, October 2nd, 2020. We're talking today about direct listings in other companies going public or announced going public transactions. What's interesting is that there were two direct listings this week, taking the total tally over the last few years to only four. So what happened this week was Asana, which was co-founded by Dustin Moskovitz, which was actually a Facebook co-founder. He took that company public through a direct listing in which they don't raise a traditional IPO round. They go straight and list on the public markets. In addition, we had another company going direct. We chatted about this firm before on the podcast, and this is US data analytics firm Palantir. They also skipped the traditional IPO, said no to a SPAC, and went straight to the direct listing. Why did they choose this instead of the other alternatives, your traditional IPO and the SPAC, which is super hot? And obviously, we got to talk about the hot SPAC deals happening this week, hot or not so hot, perhaps. The first one was Oaktree doing a deal with direct-to-consumer startup Hims. They're going public. Hims is one of these Silicon Valley-backed high-growth entities. I view this as more of like a venture capital series D/E type transaction, but now they're giving public retail investors and others access to this. We're going to chat about, should investors be thinking about buying this stock? We also want to chat about the Playboy deal. They are returning to the public markets through a SPAC. What does the market think of this transaction? But let's start off with this news of two direct listings in 1 week, which is odd because previous to this week, we only had two other direct listings basically in the history of markets. And when we're talking about direct listings, we're talking about, you know, large cap companies going public. Now Asana, which is loss making, obviously a lot of these startups still printing the red ink. However, they were valued at about $4 billion once their shares were up and listed in the public markets, closing at 25 bucks and change in terms of their share price. Now, this is important because when a company pursues a direct listing, they'll have what's called a so-called reference price, which the stock exchange comes out with sort of valuation benchmark in which they take to investors and say, you know, this is perhaps fair price. And the reference price on Asana's deal was 21 bucks per share. It started out the week as high as 28, 29 even, ended the week at around 25. So basically when it first started trading, that was the top and only declined throughout the week. So a lot of hype behind these. Now, this $4 billion valuation compares favorably to the $1.5 billion valuation they had in their last funding round in 2018, where they secured more than $200 million in venture financing, most of which happened in 2018, but they also raised cumulatively since 2009. Now, contrast that to Palantir's deal. We discussed this company on the podcast previously. 17-year-old, been out there for a while, still losing tons and tons of money, over half a billion dollars of red ink on $743 million of revenue last year, projecting revenue above $1 billion. Now, this company, Palantir, had a reference level indicated by the New York Stock Exchange of $7.25, ultimately trading well above that, started out the week north of $10.50, closing around $9.20. Also, this one peaked right when it started open, and then declined about 20%, peak to where it is now. One interesting dynamic and something to consider when looking at private companies is are direct listings going to be something that are going to gain in popularity? We saw quite a bit of a head fake back in 2018. Spotify went public via direct listing. Everyone thought, oh, you know, this is the new thing. Others are going to pursue that. But no, we only saw one since then, and that was Slack. In 2019, both of those companies have had variable performance. Spotify up roughly 64% since their April 2018 listing, and Slack declining about 28% since their July 2019 listing. So a bit of a mixed track record with respect to direct listings. But now we have two more examples of these. Mike, what are your thoughts on direct listings? Think we'll see more, especially in an environment where SPACs are so hot in terms of private companies going public. And even the traditional IPO space, I believe we saw news that Airbnb, perhaps the hottest startup out there, is going to pursue a traditional IPO as opposed to a direct listing.
Yeah, they're certainly going to become more and more popular, especially for large consumer brands that are very well known. So to get into the back end and some of the kind of technical details of these direct listings today. So just to note, this was a very big day for the NYSE, the New York Stock Exchange, as they had never dealt with two direct listings on the same day. Obviously, there was just two prior to this. And so what you see with direct listings is they typically start trading a lot later than a traditional IPO. A traditional IPO with the IPO positioning window will end up trading between 11 and noon Eastern Standard Time. In this case, Asana started trading at 12:30 and then Palantir about an hour later. And that's kind of interesting just because there was actually an issue with this direct listing, Palantir's in particular, and that was not an issue from the NYSE, as there is quite a bit of risk with this sort of this dynamic where you're trying to match the buyers and sellers, and there's a lot of risk for technical glitches. But you actually had a glitch with the software provided by Morgan Stanley, that's their ShareWorks software, where employees use that compensation plans to sell into the market on a direct listing. But there was actually an issue where there were technical errors and employees of Palantir weren't able to sell their shares in the afternoon of the listing. And since there's no share offering here, a secondary offering, if the supply of sellers is reduced for whatever reason, technical glitch or otherwise, or perhaps just sellers not wanting to sell, the price is just going to go up. That's just supply and demand dynamics.
Right.
And so you can really see this in the tick data where the ShareWorks platform started back working at about 3:30 Eastern time, about a half hour before market close. And there you see the price dip down from 9.90 right down to 9.11 within 5 minutes. And
just a flood of sellers plowing down the bid.
Exactly. Just really wanting to get in there and sell some shares, as this was a liquidity event for them for a number of employees. But, you know, Palantir really understands the dynamics of the supply and demand quite well in limiting their public float.
They had some lockups, right?
Yeah, they had lockups where existing shareholders only able to sell 20% of their shares until early 2021. And then as well, it's something that we brought up with a number of IPOs or other listings, is the concept of a dual class share structure. Unfortunately, Palantir once again had one of these where they had a very complex dual class structure where it was not transparent at all. And there was a flurry of filings before this listing. But one of the main highlights was that founders would be able to keep voting control even after they sold down their economic ownership stake below 6%. And it's just wild. The sort of thing where you don't like to see from a corporate governance perspective. And we've talked about it many times on the podcast before. We are not a fan of this sort of scenario where we really prefer, if you have the economic ownership, that you should, as a shareholder, you should also get that same voting power.
And just on the question, why did these two firms specifically choose a direct listing and why have four done it in the history of the capital markets? Well, it's a unique scenario that these firms, Asana and Palantir, in addition to Slack and Spotify, were in, is that they had a ton of cash and they did not need to raise financing. So a traditional IPO, initial public offering, you're offering stock into the market, raising capital. Now, a direct listing isn't for an entity that needs to raise capital. Direct listing, there's no equity offering, so they can choose to go direct, and it provides instant liquidity in most cases, aside from having these unique lockup structures on the Palantir deal. But traditionally, the IPO, the other difference is that, you know, IPO, they go through a marketing period. SPAC, obviously, these are marketed very well, but a direct listing, they just kind of throw it out there. And these companies are really relying on their brand in the market already to make that a success. So that's something to keep in mind if you're a firm considering going public. Well, direct listing is really only for the more mature startups that already have a significant amount of cash on hand and aren't seeking to raise additional proceeds. But onto some SPAC deals, of which there are quite a few this week. I counted four SPAC mergers announced. Going to talk about a few on the podcast today. First off, special purpose acquisition company Oaktree Acquisition, backed by famed investor Howard Marks. They announced a $1.6 billion merger with telemedicine startup Hims. So the target, Hims, they're best known as an online seller of treatments for erectile dysfunction and hair loss. So typically man stuff, that's why they call it Hims, I assume. It's founded just 3 years ago, so fairly new company. Had $89 million in revenue in 2019. Now this transaction, as we see in typical SPAC transaction, they are raising growth capital as much as $280 million for Hims, which includes $205 million from the blank check Oaktree acquisition, which they raised in their own IPO. In addition, this one's coming with a $75 million PIPE financing, so private investment into public equity, of which we've seen many a company SPAC going public transactions. What's interesting about this deal in contrast to others, for example, the Playboy deal that we're going to talk about. So this is a very high growth entity, 3 year revenue, compound annual growth rate of north of 100%, high margins, 71% gross margins. However, they are still loss making. This deal values Hims at 8.9 times sales, forecast sales for next year. Pretty huge valuation on this one, $1.6 billion company. However, in contrast to, you know, traditional IPO liquidity event, they are using this capital raise for growth capital. Hims is going to enter other categories of treatment, including diabetes, cholesterol, hypertension, sleep, fertility, etc., trying to be a more kind of fulsome healthcare telemedicine provider. Got a quote here from the CEO on what they plan on doing after this deal closes. He indicated, "This capital allows us to accelerate our ability to invest in growth and invest in condition expansion, helping millions of more people get access to affordable, high-quality healthcare." As for what the market thought of this deal, easiest way to measure this is looking at Oaktree's stock. This deal was rumored back in August, so it's kind of been out in the market for quite a while. And since then, Oaktree stock up about 4.3% since these rumors were leaked into the market in August. So not a super hot deal. Perhaps the market's cooling down a little from some of the craziness that we've seen. However, it is up, which is positive. I don't know, Mike, what are your thoughts? Should investors be buying Hims / Oaktree at this point?
Yeah, it's been an interesting deal to look at. I mean, they do have an expansion into it's Hims. They do have Hims and Hers, so that's been launched in recent years. But right now, you're looking at their revenue streams. Sexual health represents about 57% of their current revenue, and that's been the foundation of what they've grown. Like as you had mentioned, Hims. But they also, in addition to some of the verticals that you mentioned in other spaces within telehealth care, they also launch verticals in mental health and dermatology, which they believe are going to be their largest addressable markets. So that's kind of where they're seeing a lot of their future growth coming from and potentially higher margin. Interesting to note that this is a one of the traditional SaaS businesses. Well, I guess not technically, it's not an enterprise SaaS business, but a more consumer focus. But they do have SaaS margins where they have 71% gross margins, which have grown in recent years from 29% in 2018 to the current rate of, as I had mentioned, 71%. Peter Thiel is in the cap table as well. So he was also a co-founder of Palantir. So it's been a pretty big week for him.
And Facebook too.
Yeah.
Big backer, early, the first backer of Facebook actually.
Exactly. And as well, little Canadian flair, CPPIB is also an investor. I would like to note that they do have a very slick investor presentation. Just from a visual perspective, I thought their presentation was quite strong in comparison to, as Julian mentioned, we'll be talking about the Playboy acquisition or acquisition with Mountain Crest. I also do like that they provided a decent breakdown of their unit economics. Typically, in any of these sort of SaaS businesses that go public through a SPAC, there really isn't much granular detail on their unit economics. That's a typical complaint of mine. You still could ask for a little bit more, but this is one of the more comprehensive that I've seen for SPAC targets, which I did like to see that sort of exposure, that sort of disclosure and sort of cohort analysis. That's really my thoughts on the HIMSS acquisition. It's interesting to follow, a little bit of a pop.
But not much of a pop. I mean, Oak Tree stock up 4.3% on the deal. As we've discussed in the past, what do SPAC investors like to see? Electric vehicle deals and anything related, whether it's battery power, things of that type of EV related technology, fits like hand to glove, EV tech. And the SPAC structure. This is not a SPAC. This is not an EV SPAC deal.
Obviously. And ideally, no revenue. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So SPAC investors like to see this real early stage EV stuff, of which this is not one. So you wouldn't necessarily expect a large pop on that. And should investors be buying? You look at historical post SPAC performance, and basically all the alpha comes on the announcement, and post SPAC performance tends to do quite poor. And so I'd advise investors to perhaps stay away from this one. But, you know, that's all I really got to say about that. Contrast the HIMSS Oak Tree deal to this Playboy deal, which is something super interesting because you have something completely different, in which Playboy, which is famed for its formerly popular Gentleman's Magazine, of which everyone knows that's kind of completely gone away. Not completely, but almost completely. Now it's more of a turnaround story. They're trying to get a new lease on life. They're turning into more of a diversified media and, surprisingly, a men's health company. So they announced that they're returning to the public markets after being private, executing on this turnaround strategy over the past 9 years away from the public markets, and obviously without their famed founder backing them. I guess he was pretty old anyway, and probably mostly just enjoying the mansion and all the ancillary benefits of founding Playboy. But nonetheless, Playboy coming back to the public markets through a merger with a special purpose acquisition company called Mountain Crest Acquisition. This deal values Playboy at $413 million inclusive of debt. In terms of financial performance, they did about $78 million in revenue in 2019, forecasting some pretty significant growth for 2020, $131 million this year, of which licensing revenue will hit $57 million, and over 70% of revenue for next year is expected to be locked in. So more visibility pursuing this licensing type business model. EBITDA roughly $24 million this year. So this is quasi-profitable company, perhaps not on a net income basis, but they are profitable on an adjusted EBITDA basis. And obviously, as we spoke about it time and time again on these SPAC deals, investors really like very early stage stuff where they're negative EBITDA or perhaps even pre-revenue. Now, Playboy, obviously a very established, mature company and was declining, now perhaps trying to get some growth back into the company. It's interesting because with the proceeds from this transaction, they're getting roughly $50 million from SPAC Mountain Crest. I believe they have a pipe attached to it as well. They're trying to run an acquisition strategy across what they call the pleasure lifestyle consumer category, which you can only imagine what that's all about. Nonetheless, interesting deal in contrast to, you know, these early stage EV transactions of which SPAC investors just go bananas over. This is more of a turnaround type established brand, breathing new life into it. And as you can guess, market not keen on it. Stock effectively flat in terms of Mountain Crest, trading slightly above net asset value at this point. So their head is above water. Expect this deal to complete late Q4 or early Q1, in which it will trade under the symbol PLBY. Got to disclose that we are long units of Mountain Crest acquisition, bought those a while ago, so bought these pre-deal at a discount to net asset value. And I should note the interesting structure of Mountain Crest acquisition, this SPAC, because your typical SPAC comes in units, which are made up of shares and a fraction of a warrant. Mountain Crest was different, such that each unit was shares and a fraction of a share purchase right. So I wanted to clarify this. Most SPACs are fairly typical, although each one tends to have a certain quirk to it. Mike, what are your thoughts on this Playboy deal? You think it could be successful? Clearly, the market is kind of lukewarm on it.
Yeah, lukewarm, and I think it's kind of fair. I mean, they have a goal to build $100 million of EBITDA by 2025, so I guess it's good to have goals. You know, it's a turnaround strategy, so I don't really have any insight into, you know, what the probability is that they reach those goals. Just that turnarounds are quite difficult by nature. Market also agrees with that, with the common trading just below NAV still. But when looking at the deal here, I mean, just initially when you look at the press release, one of the first number financial metrics that I saw in the press release was they were touting the $180 million worth of NOLs, net operating losses, that can be used for tax purposes. That's not really a positive sign when that's something that you're highly touting in the press release.
Yes, it doesn't really scream high growth entity.
No, it certainly doesn't. As you'd mentioned, the structure of Mountain Crest with the rights and lack of warrants made them a favorable partner for Playboy, as it's a little less dilutive for current shareholders. As well, there was the deal for Playboy purchasing $700,000 worth of the founder's shares at a price below the deal price. I believe it was $6.35 a share.
That's an interesting structure.
Yeah, it's basically just a renegotiation of the founder's shares, which is fairly...
The so-called promote, of
yes.
Which, you know, a lot of people criticize because they say, oh, the SPAC founders are getting 20% of the pre-deal company, but, you know, by and large, that's generally not the case because there are these side deals where they either forfeit or sell off a bunch of those seed shares.
Yeah, exactly. There is a one-year lockup for existing Playboy shareholders with a partial release in 6 months. If the stock trades above 14, that would obviously be a very favorable outcome, trading above 14, given where it's trading right now. But the background to this deal as well, and why I guess partially why it's being taken public, is that Playboy was originally taken private by Hugh Hefner and private equity company RISV Travers in 2011. And then Travers bought Hefner's 35% stake for $35 million in 2018 after his death from his family.
Did they get the mansion as well?
I would assume that would come with it. But yeah, this deal had been rumored, as you mentioned, for about a month, and really didn't get the share price pop that they were looking for. But as a sponsor, they were still able to complete a deal, ensure that there is some value to their warrants as well as their founder shares. So at this point, I mean, for a SPAC sponsor, a deal is better than no deal.
For sure.
It's the name of the game. So I guess it's a favorable outcome. I mean, I'm not holding my breath on the future prospects of Playboy.
Yeah, as you indicated, a deal is better than no deal. Obviously, this Playboy deal, somewhat of a turnaround story, a pretty tired brand, if you ask me. It's certainly a company that I don't believe could pursue a traditional IPO, just given its stage in its life cycle and what they're trying to accomplish here. I should note a couple things. If we contrast this one to Chamath at Social Capital, he did that Open Door deal last month and he did exceptional marketing. His PR was just tremendous behind that, got the stock up nicely, which is really necessary to make a SPAC deal successful. Because the reason they need that the SPAC price to be well above the net asset value, because if it isn't, all the hedge funds involved, they have to redeem for NAV because that's how they maximize value. So it's really important that these shares get marketed effectively such that that stock does pop, you get that retail interest, and the shares transition from hedge funds to retail holders who are have much lower propensity to redeem the shares, such that the pro forma entity has as much cash as they can get, and you know it doesn't sort of throw sand in the gears of the deal. So marketing's certainly very, very important. As you indicated, Mike, this Hims deal had pretty good marketing, slick presentation, etc. The Playboy deal, not so much. Their investor deck, not super excitement driving for the retail investor. You know, you didn't really have super effective marketing behind the stock. But I will note that post-deal SPACs are exceptionally volatile. So this one's trading around net asset value. Could go either way. I mean, perhaps they could get good marketing behind it. And in terms of post-SPAC performance, they've really been mixed as of late. If you look at Nikola, which has sort of crashed and burned, mired in controversy, and really, really bad news coming out of that one. But something like DraftKings, which is, you know, skyrocketed now I believe north of $50 or $60 per share from a $10 SPAC price. So certainly a mixed track record in post-deal SPACs as of late, but certainly this Playboy one, as you indicated, a deal is better than no deal, and they certainly got a deal here. Is it a hot one? Not at this point, but we'll see.
And Julian, just for some positive news in the SPAC world, there was a number of IPOs today in the SPAC world today. How much was raised today? I believe it was over $3 billion.
Yeah, so on the initial public offering of special purpose acquisition vehicles, it's just been absolutely off the charts. Seemingly every day we're seeing 3 on average S1 filings. Now S1 is the prospectus such that they can conduct a future IPO. As you indicated, today and yesterday, the 1st and 2nd of October, we had 11 SPAC IPOs, which is an all-time record.
That's absolutely unprecedented.
I believe we had 7 today and 4 yesterday. Throughout those 2 days, the first 2 days of October, that raised cumulative $4.5 billion, now searching for targets at 11 more SPACs, which takes a tally to nearly 200 SPACs out there in the market. And I'm going to speculate in October, I think we'll break the July record of $10 billion raised in SPACs. 2 days in, we're already almost 50% there. So decent chance, not necessarily going out on a limb with that call. But we'll see. We're seeing huge IPOs, and the smallest one over the past 2 days was $200 million, the largest nearly $1 billion. So that's something to watch, is that there's a ton of these. And what's also interesting, some commentary on how these things are trading. Of these 11 SPAC IPOs, all but 3 of them are trading at or below net asset value, which is indicative that perhaps the street has been flooded with SPACs. There's too much supply, not enough demand. And the only ones these days that we're seeing trade at a premium, they're one of 2 sponsors. Number one, biotech. Typically, the biotech deals are quite small in the $100 to $200 million range because they're looking for these early stage targets that are typically, say, $500 million or so. The second SPAC sponsor that can get investors excited in their IPO, venture capital. So we're seeing venture capital backed SPACs come out of the gates with a nice premium, sometimes as high as 10 to 25%. So keep that in mind if you're looking to trade new SPAC issues. They're typically structured as units, meaning common shares and warrants, and they typically split 52 days after the IPO. So there's some trading color and knowledge for you if you do want to take a look at these new SPAC IPOs. But that's about it. on this week's episode of the Absolute Return Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it, where we chatted about direct listings, got some SPAC deals in there as well. That market's hotter than ever, seeing just an absolute insane number of IPOs in the space. Can't keep up that pace. I'm sure it'll slow down at some point, but given the massive amount of S1s we've seen filed, I think this is only going to get a bit crazier prior to it slowing down. But nonetheless, if you enjoyed the episode, check out more at absoluteturnpodcast.com. Definitely leave us a review, tell your friends and colleagues, and certainly, Mike, they should follow you on Twitter. What's your handle?
It is m_Kessler.
And check me out as well. My Twitter handle is @JulianKlimochko. We wish you all the best in your trading, speculating, perhaps some IPO allocating as well. But until next week, we'll chat with you soon. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.